This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Quilting in the United States used to be a source of pride for many women of wealth. Before the Civil War, only a certain class of people could afford fine fabrics. As textile mills made fabrics more accessible, everyday women began quilting. These quilts provided warmth for their families, but also told stories of pain and triumph. Special quilts were made to celebrate births and weddings. The North Carolina Museum of History honors the work and stories of women who quilt in an exhibit called Quilt Speak, Uncovering Women's Voices Through Quilts. And joining us to talk about the exhibit is Diana Bell Kite, curator of cultural history at the North Carolina Museum of History. Diana, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about quilting, because really, I mean, at its root, it is about thrift, right? Essentially, quilting is a thing that women do as a matter of thrift, right, to keep their families warm. But it also, at a certain point, becomes a kind of a class marker as well at the higher reaches. So talk about this distinction.
Well, before the Civil War, quilting was especially practiced by women of means in North Carolina and the South, primarily white women who had the resources to buy expensive imported fabric. They had the time also to devote to needlework education and the time to spend creating these very elaborate showpieces that were more intended to showcase their status and wealth than they were to, because they needed something especially warm. By the late 19th century, and I'm speaking specifically about here in North Carolina, quilting really democratized. We had the growth of textile mills here in the state and region, and fabric became a lot more affordable and available, and women of all social classes were able to gain access to affordable fabric and to make quilts to keep their families warm.
But are there two levels of quilting going on? Because it does seem to me that there was a sort of a domestic functional kind of quilting that was happening in the world. Or no, was this always, or earlier before fabric became widely available, only something accessible to wealthy women?
It was more accessible to wealthy women. And you see some utilitarian quilts from the mid-19th century. But you really start to see a lot more of them later in the century.
Talk about that change, the textile industry.
Right, the textile industry was really a big player in that. You also, and this is a result of the changing industry as well, but you see women using a lot of ingenuity in order to find the materials that they needed to make quilts, like quilts made from feed sacks, quilts made from tobacco premiums that were becoming widespread around the turn of the century, quilts made from anything that was textile and free or available, someone made it into a quilt. We have a quilt in the exhibit made out of suiting samples. The woman who made the quilt, she and her husband owned a general store, and they stocked catalogs like the kind that Sears and Roebuck would distribute to stores, that a man could come in and look at the different fabric options and the different style options and order a suit in the mail. And so after these became, after more current editions of these catalogs came out, she and other women would save them, take out all the swatches, and then turn those swatches into quilts. So just anything that could be sewn could be made into a quilt.
That Sears catalog had a lot of uses, did it not?
It did, it sure did.
And this exhibit at the Museum of History is broken down into three themes, right? Tell us about those.
The first section is called I Control, and that deals primarily with quilting as a display of power, as we were talking about women quilting to show their social status, and also quilting by the women that they enslaved, just because these elite women were the ones producing these quilts, that doesn't mean that they did all the work on them themselves. And a lot of times enslaved women were also working on these quilts. And enslaved women also made quilts for their own families. So unfortunately, those are very, very rare these days, and we don't have any in our collection. And then this section sort of ends with the decline of quilting as a social marker and the democratization of quilting. The second section I provide is about this ingenuity of women navigating the changing economy and that being displayed through their quilting. And then the final section I remember is about memory quilting and how women have always quilted as a way to remember the past, whether they are marking life's milestones through quilting or narrating various visions of the past in their quilts.
Tell us more about that one, how women use these quilts to tell their stories.
That's probably my favorite subsection of the exhibit, because we have such interesting examples of women depicting the past in quilts. For example, we have one quilt made by a woman from Yancey County who was Canadian by birth. She met a country doctor from Yancey County, married him, and moved there. And she went in search of, and this is in the 1930s she's doing this, she went in search of a record of all of the men from Yancey County who fought in the Great War, in World War I, and couldn't find one. So she decided she would compile her own record of war veterans. And so she visited every household in Yancey County, made a comprehensive list of all of the living and dead veterans, and then embroidered their names on a quilt that she made. And even though she was a Canadian by birth, she clearly had adapted to her new home's segregation practices because she grouped all of the African-American veterans in one spot at the bottom of the quilt with COL for colored beside their names. So just a very interesting, both her version of the past, but also looking at it today, we can see how the society she lived in affected her quilting
as well. So there's the stories that the quilts tell, and then there are the stories about the quilters themselves, including the story of a woman who had been enslaved, formerly enslaved woman. Talk about the exhibit and the examples it includes of her work.
Yeah, there was a woman named Patience White who was born into slavery around 1830. She was from Alamance County, and she became free in 1865, and like most formerly enslaved people, she was unable to read or write. But sometime between her 50th and 77th birthdays, if the census data is correct, she learned how to read and write, and she made a beautiful log cabin quilt as a thank you gift for the woman who taught her to read and write. And that's in the exhibit.
Well, tell us, Diana, about the genesis of this. How did this exhibit come about?
Well, the Museum of History has a fantastic quilt collection. We have about 400 North Carolina quilts. And it's been a really long time since we've had many of them on display. And so I've been wanting for quite a while to be able to show some of our amazing quilts that have these amazing stories. And so I was really excited to be able to have the opportunity to put together this exhibit, focusing on, and it is a quilt exhibit, but at its core, it's an exhibit about women as told through the quilts that they made. So we have about 40 quilts in the exhibit, and it's been a lot of fun.
But I'm talking to Diana Bell Kite, who's curator of the North Carolina Museum of History. The exhibit on view is called Quilt Speak, Uncovering Women's Voices Through Quilts. And joining the conversation now is one of the founding members of the African American Quilt Circle in Durham, also part of the Heritage Quilters Giving Circle in Warren County. Jerry Ann King Johnson joins us now. Welcome to the State of Things. Thank you so much.
Yes, I'm glad to be here.
You are a quilter and have a rich history of quilting in your family, am I right?
That's right. I started quilting. Well, I've known quilts and quilting all of my life. I grew up sleeping under quilts. And when I was about 7 or 8, I started helping my mother with her quilting by cutting out squares. We would use cardboard to make our pattern pieces. And so I would cut squares and triangles and sew them together. And then she would assemble the blocks into the larger quilt. And my grandmother was a quilter. And it was really interesting, Diana, talking about the wool swatches from the catalogs. My father used to sell men's suits, and he would have these catalogs. That was one of his side businesses. And when they were outdated, he would give the catalogs to his mother. Her name was Pearl. And she would take the swatches out. And, of course, you would have the gray, the brown, the black, the navy blue. And she would assemble these quilts. And he would buy her a nice piece of fabric for the backing. And so we had that history. Yeah. I mean, most women in the community who lived on our street, they quilted. They would come to our house sometimes and quilt around the quilting frame. And I was always there to pick up the scraps, and I could make extra things, small quilts for my dolls, or we could, you know, make cat clothes.
Or... Well, was this something that was attractive to you, something you wanted to do as a child,
yes.
or you were sort of pressed into service?
No. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I was really good with needle and thread. Yeah. That was something that I was drawn to, and I really enjoyed doing
it. What about the sociability of it, the fact that so many women are together? I mean, I'm guessing you're also able to eavesdrop, and you're hearing all
yes,
the great stories,
hear
right?
grown women talk. Yeah. Of course, you were not supposed to say anything, mm-hmm. but you could hear them talk. But you learned the significance of women coming together to share their stories. Sometimes women would share wisdom with each other. There would be recipes or ways to learn new things. I grew up in a community where people were very serious about education, music, and cooking. And so those stories were also told while people did the quilting. There wasn't a lot of judgment about stitches being too large or fabrics not matching. It was, you just put the quilt together because that was what you were about.
And I would think, too, just the ingenuity, using, you know, sample swatches and whatever material is available, and then having a nice piece of material maybe as the backing, even a pair of your old pajamas, I'm told.
That's right.
Those.
That was one of my favorite quilts. I was about 3 or 4 then, and my mother bought me a pair of leopard-footed pajamas. And I tried to wear them until I was way too big for them. And finally, she took them from me and cut them up and put them in a quilt. And I could see that flannel pajama pattern, that piece of fabric, and I really enjoyed it. The other thing, all quilts tell stories, whether they are intentional or by design. And in my mother's quilts, I could see scraps from her dresses, from her aprons. And that was always important. And another thing that I thought that was unique about, at least in our community, when quilts were worn out, they would oftentimes use the worn out quilt as batting for new quilts. And so as the new quilt wore down, you could begin to see the old quilt. I mean, quilts were wow. quilts were essential in our community. And in terms of status, quilts represented a certain level of security because you knew if you had quilts, you could stay warm. And that was really important.
Were the quilts generally, when you were growing up, and as you remember making them yourself, were they meant for their commercial value? Were you planning to sell them, or were they going to hang around the house?
Not my mother's quilts, but my grandmother's quilts. She grew up on a sharecropper's farm, and so she would make quilts to sell, very cheap. You know, $15, $10, $20. And they used, she would use old scrap clothes, things that people would give her that she could cut up to make quilts. Now, the fine wool quilts were for the family. But
I was going to ask you if there's a difference in the way you would approach quilt making if you knew you were going to sell it versus one that was going to hang around the house.
Oh, yes, definitely. And even today, I mean, we as quilters, we may have hand quilted quilts that we know are special that will be for family members or special gifts. And more than likely, those quilts that we are able to sell, they have been commercially quilted. Machine quilted.
So you describe yourself as a quilting activist. Tell me more about that.
I am a quilting activist. I believe that quilting is such a powerful metaphor for building communities. And I discovered that along the way because in quilting, you take a perfectly good piece of cloth and cut it up intentionally and put it together with other pieces of cloth to make something. And sometimes you don't know exactly how it's going to turn out. And I think when we think about building communities and as we work in our communities, we have to be able to take those risks. We have to live with a certain level of ambiguity. And when you're making quilts, oftentimes that's what you're doing. I mean, we always have this vision and about what a quilt will be. And it's that same vision that you have to have in community building. But there are some places where you are not quite sure where it's going or how it's going to turn out. I like to encourage people to think about the quilt as a symbol of building community, things becoming stronger as a result of, you know, bringing different pieces together. And I like to showcase quilts. I've never seen an ugly quilt. And I think that as a quilt activist, I'm always looking for the stories behind the quilts, what the quilt says about the conditions, the social conditions of the women, and also the political conditions or the political mindsets. Like one of my favorite quilters is a woman, Nora Ezell, and she was from the Black Belt of Alabama. And in the 60s, she did the Martin Luther King quilt. And she was very intentional about sharing this story. And that in the African-American experience is not new. Harriet Powers did quilts, the religious quilts, back in the late 1800s. So that piece, I think, is really important.
Jerry Ann King Johnson, one of the founding members of the African American Quilt Circle in Durham and part of the Heritage Quilters Giving Circle in Warren County. Diana Bell Kite is curator of cultural history at North Carolina's Museum of History. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Quilt Speak, Uncovering Women's Voices Through Quilts, is on view now at the North Carolina Museum of History. Many events and activities. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley's our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacia.